All right, I'm going to apologize up front. There's a decent chance my voice is going to fade at some point this morning. I woke up with some sort of a cough congestion thing here, so I just apologize if that begins to happen. Go ahead and open up to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12 is where we're going to be. We're going to keep looking at the series we're in, Kingdom Come, walking through the book of Matthew, studying the words of Matthew and his recording of what Jesus has said to us, and this morning I think will be good for us, a little bit different, I think, in some maybe some immediate practical application at the end. That's not always the case for us on a Sunday morning, and we're okay with that because we think in the end, the way that studying the Bible works is that you don't put it together like a combination where if you get it just right and you do this and you do that, then life is all better. But this morning I think we'll have some practical application to walk away with. At the end. So we're going through the book of Matthew and really talking about the idea that there's another kingdom. There's another kingdom besides this one that we live in, whether you want to talk about the United States, whether you want to talk about our own little kingdoms that we create, our own little sandcastles, as we talked about when we began this series a while ago now. There's another kingdom that we live for, one that's not of this world, one that Jesus prays for in the Sermon on the Mount, in the Lord's Prayer, when he says, "Your kingdom come," and this is a different kingdom, one that is everlasting, that never fades, that does not rust, that does not crumble. And this is what we've been talking about for well over a year now as we've looked at this, and it's a good reminder for us this morning as we watch the news and as we go and vote this week, that we remember that no matter who our president is, no matter who you vote for, no matter who becomes president or who is president now, that person is not our king. He's not our king, not just in the sense that he's not a king and a dictator of the United States, but he's not our king in that there's another that has our allegiance, because this kingdom is not the end. So when you go vote this week, and you better, you need to go vote, no matter whether your candidate wins or loses, your candidate is not Jesus. Your candidate is not Jesus. Winning won't save us, and losing won't condemn us. What it does for our country, that's a different story, so choose wisely. But our temporary kingdoms are not the ultimate kingdom that we are concerned about this morning. So let me just urge you, don't put more hope in your government or your president than you put in your church. Your church is infinitely more important than your nation is. Now maybe that sounds crazy. I mean, you see the number of people that we have in here this morning. You know who belongs to this body of Providence. And comparatively, we are massively small. But in God's view of things, your church is massively more important than your nation is. It's not to minimize what our nation is, but it's to maximize and it's to celebrate what God has done in the church and that he died for the church. The church ultimately will prevail. It is part of a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And we worship a king that will not fail you. So just remember that this week. All right, sermonette over. That was my little aside for the morning, but it ties in well to what we're going to be talking about. This series, Kingdom Come, walking through Matthew. And we've come across some consistent themes as we've gone through the book of Matthew, as we've walked through some different things in the book of Matthew. Matthew continually highlights these different themes, and one that we're going to look at this morning is that this idea that it doesn't matter a bit about what you are on the outside, but it's what's inside that counts. We've hit on this a lot the last 2 weeks as persecution has ramped up for Jesus and the Pharisees, the kind of ruling religious, the ones that everyone looked up to be the godly ones, have begun to really push back on Jesus. First, they try to catch him in this trap talking about the Sabbath, and he called them out and said, "Listen, you're more worried about rules than you are about the heart behind the rules and your heart in following those rules. That will get you nowhere in God's kingdom." And then he continues on and he says that really it's what's inside that matters when he starts talking about the what we looked at last week, the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. And what comes out in the way that your heart works and how cold your heart is towards Jesus in the end is going to be what matters. So this is what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. The Pharisees continue to harden their hearts, and Jesus continues to give them warnings, saying, be careful where you go, you may go too far. So he's called them out for wanting to be external rule followers. He calls them whitewashed tombs, clean on the outside, but filthy and dead on the inside. He knows they're putting on a show. So today's text will continue that theme. You think, well, maybe, I've heard this, I get it, this is what we'll talk about again, but there's a little bit of a spin to it today. And I'll show you what I mean here in just a few minutes. Because what you're going to see is that what's on the outside does matter some. It's not just what's on the inside, at least not totally. I'll show you what we're talking about here in just a second. Let's read Matthew chapter 12, 33 through 37. It says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. We'll stop there. Since I was in high school, maybe even middle school, I'm not really sure where this fascination began, but I have been fascinated by the power of words. It has captured me for some reason. I don't know why, but it began with the power of the spoken word. Somewhere along the way, I became amazed at the power that you could tap into and how you could be moved and transformed by listening to someone speak. I'll be honest, I think the first time that I really, truly noticed this was, again, middle school, high school, I don't know when it was, but listening to Bill Clinton speak. I don't know what your politics are, I don't really care what your politics are, but here's the thing about Bill Clinton. I could watch him, I could know without a shadow of a doubt he was lying to me, and then I would listen and listen intently, and somehow by the end of listening to him speak, I would be like, well, maybe. Maybe he's saying something that's worthwhile, and the man had a gift. He could speak. You can say whatever you want about his politics, you can say whatever you want about the way he did things, but he could speak. That's a skill that can be developed, but it's also a gift that, I say it's a gift, being able to lie to someone's face and have them believe you. I don't know if that's truly a gift or not, but I hope that's a skill that my kids never develop, but He was able to do that. And so I became fascinated by that, knowing what I knew in my head, but then also knowing what would happen to me whenever I would listen to somebody like that speak. There's something about great speakers that really captured my imagination. I got a CD set whenever I was, I don't know, maybe in high school. It's a 4-CD set, and it's the greatest speeches in history. It says in history, but I guess it's the greatest speeches since speeches could be recorded, is really what it was, because it's the live recordings of these speeches. And so it's got everything from Lou Gehrig's farewell speech to presidential speeches, political speeches, to Martin Luther King. It's got all of these great speeches, and I have listened to every one of the speeches on the CD set multiple times. I'm kind of a dork, I get it, but that's just something that for me, it became fascinating for me. Perhaps that explains why part of what I do for a living is built around public speaking. But somewhere along the line, things began to change for me just a little bit. It became more about public speaking, and it became more about what those words really meant and what those words stood for, not just the mechanics of getting up and speaking, but the ideas that drove them. It became clear to me that speaking, that words were about ideas. And ideas had consequences and purpose and power. And think about it. Not all words are created equal. Not all words are used equally. There are certain words said in certain moments that mean more. Sometimes it's things like, I have a dream, that inspire millions. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Other times it's words as you stand across from your bride and you say, I do. Or maybe something like, it's a girl. Or maybe something else like, it's cancer. Words have power. Words will affect you. They will shape you. Words, even today, in a society built around technology, built around visuals, built around so many other things, it is still words that drive us. In fact, much of technology, and especially the digital technology and the visuals that we see, are simply like messengers, containers for those words, ways to get the words across more effectively. Just a vehicle to get the words to us better. So how is it that our words have such a sway over us today? I think it's because God designed words to work that way. Go all the way back to Genesis 1. God could have created the world in any way that He chose. He could have waved His hand. He could have fashioned something out of nothing. But what Genesis 1 tells us is that He chose to speak the world into existence. We can't even comprehend that. But that's how God chose to bring about our existence, the world's existence, is by speaking it. He didn't build it. He spoke. Words have always been at the heart of God's work. And now we read this from Jesus. We read this here in the book of Matthew, and I'll be honest, I think this is a little bit contrary to how most of us view life. I think if you were to ask most people how you really know someone's heart, what they would say is, I don't care what they say, I don't care what comes out of their mouth, I want you to watch their actions. I mean, that's the cliche, right? He can talk the talk, but can he walk the walk? Talk is cheap. We've heard all of that. But that's not really the type of words Jesus has in mind. What he has more in mind is how the words themselves were fashioned and what they were formed by. Read with me again, especially verse 34 and 36, 34 through 36. You brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person, out of his good treasure, brings forth good, and the evil person, out of his evil treasure, brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. Jesus is drawing our attention to pay attention to the words people use, and even more specifically, how they use them. You can't judge them by just by the substance of the words. So I want to make sure that you understand this. Jesus isn't just saying, whatever somebody says, take it at face value, and that's how you judge somebody. What he's showing you is that there's something behind those words. There's something that drives those words. And it's not just the words spoken in a moment, but it's the words that accumulate over a lifetime. Jesus is saying, where did the words come from? What drove the words for the people to say? What shaped the whole conversation that people were in? He wants you to see that if you draw from a well that has poison, you can't expect to get sweet tea out of that, right? If you're drawing from a well that has been poisoned, you're not going to get lemonade. You're going to get poison. Again, he's not telling us to analyze and pick apart words so much. He is saying that you can tell a lot about a man by the way that he speaks over his lifetime. The tendency here for us, and I want to caution against this, is for us to approach this like a Pharisee, right? We hear that out of the overflow of the mouth, the heart will speak, and a man will be judged by his words, and immediately, this is my response, I don't know if it's yours, immediately my response is, okay, what can I say and what can I not? What can I say? What actually can I communicate and say, let me put that on the approved list, and then let me have my unapproved list? Which is where we end up with like our Christian curse words, right? You know what I'm talking about? When you say like, dagjimmit, or you start creating these words in order to kind of fill that void in our language and our vocabulary. So that's the way that we tend to do this. And I think it's wise to avoid profanity when we speak. Let me be clear about that. I still remember as a kid seeing what I think is probably the only worthwhile church marquee I've ever seen in my life. And it said, profanity is strong words used by weak people. That made an impression on me. Made an impression on me to remember that and to think about that and the way that I chose my words. But Jesus is talking about something much more than just profanity and certain words that we use. He's telling us that the way that we talk, not the measured performance, not the carefully made, carefully worded promise, but more the way that we talk just generally, just when we're not thinking through things, when we're not careful in the words that we choose, when we're just speaking off the cuff, when we're just rattling things on, those things are really more of an indication of what's inside your heart. What does that say about you when you read something like that? What is your response when you read that? Does it give you pause? It gives me pause. But let me ask it this way. Think through your conversations. I want to give you just a second. I'm going to grab a drink of water. I want you to think about your conversations over the last 2 weeks with whoever they've been with. Think about your conversations with your spouse, your friends, your kids, your coworkers, your family. Just think about that for a second. Get an idea of what those conversations were like over the last couple of weeks. I'm going to let you guys do that for just a second. Okay, for some of you, you use a lot more words than other people, and you've made it about 24 hours thinking about what your conversations have been. So you guys are just going to have to keep thinking about it. I'm not going to name any names or anything, but some of you guys are still thinking about all the words in the conversations that you've had for the last few weeks. So I want you to keep thinking about that. If we were to list those conversations out, if we were to put those out and just read them for people, what would that say about you? What would your words reveal about you? What would your conversations with other people, with your spouse, with your kids, what would that say about who you are? Would you hear from that, this is a very caring person. This is a very patient person. This is a very kind person. Does it say that you're a good friend that cares for others and seeks their good? Say that you're a good wife, a good husband, that cherishes your spouse. Can I just be honest? If I were to put my conversations out there, if I were just to have that list of just my conversations, and we'll limit it to just my wife and my kids, I think I could sum up 80% of what I say with two words. I want. I want. I think that's most of my conversations. And this is what I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks, thinking about this passage. I think I want describes most of my language in my conversations. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. I want you to go here, to be there. Most of those things are justifiable. I can justify as a dad that I have the authority to tell my kids to do what to do. So I'm not talking about justification as to whether or not they're okay to say. I'm just telling you the sum total of what your conversations have been. What do people take from that? I mean, there's nothing wrong with me saying, clean your room, clear the table, fix my dinner. I'm just kidding. I'm just seeing if you guys are still awake. Not going to say that. But no kidding. My wife and my kids, the majority of what they're going to hear from me is, I want you to do something. I want this. I want that. And that terrifies me to think about that. If my kids only hear from me, I want, over and over and over, then resentment likely won't be far behind. I don't want my kids to grow up and look back on their childhood and think about their dad and think, you know what, most of what my dad said to me was, I want something. What I truly want is for them to grow up, to look back, to think about their childhood and their dad, and to think first and foremost words like, I love you, I care for you, I'm here for you, I've got you. Fortunately, I don't think that's what my words tend to communicate. I don't think that's what I tend to communicate the most. Fortunately, I think what I say is I want. My own heart this week, I don't think I could sum up my conversations with something better than that. What about you? What do your words say about you? What do your words say about what you value? Let me ask you this way, the biggest question, the ultimate question in here, what kingdom do your words show that you have allegiance to? If we laid out your conversations over the last couple of weeks, would it be possible for people to look at that and say that guy's kingdom is not of this world? Her kingdom is something else. They're not totally invested in this world. Their life is built around something bigger. This is what Jesus is getting at here. This is what he's driving at here. If most of what you say is, I want, then there's a good chance the kingdom that you're most interested in is the one that you are building. That is a problem. The Pharisees had condemned themselves over and over and over in the way that they pressed Jesus. Their words revealed their heart as they began to call Jesus out on certain things that showed that their heart was nowhere where it needed to be. Instead, they had other things they were interested in, like protecting their own system, like protecting their own teachings. So their words had called them out. Jesus knew the hearts of the Pharisees because their language gave them away. They had a language problem and it gave them away. It's kind of like a tell. Do you know what a tell is? There's different ways. You can talk about a tell with somebody that's lying. In sports, like in baseball, sometimes a pitcher has a tell where they do a certain thing before they throw a pitch and you can tell what type of pitch it's going to be. It's something to kind of tip you off as to what the real truth is, what is really happening. This is what your words are. It is a tell for your heart. Jesus is saying that your speech will give you away. Your conversations will give you away. It tips everyone off as to what's really in your heart. So do you have a language problem? Do you have a conversation problem? Again, I'm not talking about specific words. Talking about the sum total of how you communicate. If you look over the last few weeks and you begin to realize that your language doesn't line up with where you know your heart should be, which is exactly my experience as I study this passage, then how do you respond to that? I want to give you a couple of very specific things. I want you to think through how you do this. A couple of specific things that you can do this week, you can work on this week. If you have a spouse, then put this into practice with your spouse. If you don't, then do it with friends or with others. I want you to think of a few specific people that you can kind of put this into practice with. The first, number one, recognize the power of your words. Recognize the power of your words. So often we can be very casual in the way that we use our words. We can be very casual in the way that we speak. We can be flippant in the way we say things, when we say things, and even what we say. We just don't put much thought into it. We just kind of spit things out and then we move on. And our conversations are just that. They're just words. There's no ideas behind them. There's no thought behind them. They're just words that pour out. No intention. Let me challenge you this week to measure your words. Think about your conversations. Here's what I mean. At some point this week, you will have a conversation that will begin with someone. A friend, a spouse, others that you just pass in the hall, whatever. You're going to have a conversation that will begin. You'll discuss random details about each other's life. whether you'd be talking about the sunshine, you'd be talking about politics, you'd be talking about something. And at that point, you'll have a choice to go in a few different directions. You can cut off the conversation. It can stay on the surface. It can stay just, hi, bye, how you doing? Yeah, can't believe that guy got all the votes. Can't believe that guy didn't get the votes. Let's move on. Cut the conversation off. Nobody's life dramatically impacted in either direction. Or you can have the little chit-chat back and forth, and then that can lead to something else, and you can become cynical. You can start complaining. You can start bickering. You can start talking about how terrible things are. Typically, what will happen from that point is either both of you will chime in, this thing will snowball, and then it just becomes a mess, and everybody just gets to get stuff off their chest. Maybe you feel a little bit better, maybe you don't. Usually what happens is one person gets really, really cynical, the other person gets really, really exhausted. Like, okay, can we stop talking about this? Can we just move on? Or it could go in a different direction. You could encourage. You could choose to pray for someone. You could choose to point out areas where God has used this person, either around them or in your own life. You could build up. You could point out what I would call an evidence of grace. Evidence that God's grace is working in them. Those words have tremendous power. Your words have tremendous power. Don't waste them. Don't miss that. Use them wisely. Husbands, listen to me. Listen to me. If you'll do this, if you will encourage and build your wife up, it will mean everything. And it will make everything in your marriage work better. And I am not telling you that from somebody that has got this down. I'm just telling you, use your words wisely to build them up. It's like the oil in the car. Without it, man, stuff just grinds. And it's hard to make anything happen. Use your words wisely. It makes things run so much better. Second thing, recognize the source of your words. So recognize the power of your words, then recognize the source of your words. This one's hard for us. This one's not easy. I mean, how many times have you done something and immediately as something comes out of your mouth, you say, sorry, forgive me, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean to say that. Don't know where that came from. I didn't really mean it. Unfortunately for us, we probably really did mean it. At least in the moment, we really did. The issue at point is that we don't have to deal with what we said, but we have to deal with where it came from our hearts. If you look over the last couple of weeks and you realize that you have a language problem, you have a conversation problem, know that your first issue is not a horizontal one. Your first issue is not with your spouse. Your first issue is not with your kids. It's not with a coworker. Your issue, if you have a language problem, if you have a word problem, your issue is a vertical problem. Here's what I mean. If you're ready to tear into your kids, and your wife is driving you crazy, and you just can't find anything good about anybody in that moment, your primary issue is not with them. Your primary issue is with your heart and your relationship to God. You have to stop. Move away, correct your heart. Move away from the I wants, the I needs of your kingdom and begin to build in a different kingdom. That is where your language changes. Do you want to be a more encouraging friend? Do you want to be a more loving and respectful wife that builds up your husband? Do you want to be a more caring parent, a more loving parent? That does not happen by changing your words. Happens by changing your heart. That is where it begins. And finally, the last thing is recognize the eternal impact of your words. Recognize the eternal impact of your words. If words have power, and if words reveal our heart, again, not just words just saying things like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, that you know, you don't follow through with. I'm talking about a bigger picture, a bigger pattern of your life revealed by your words. That's where our words come from our heart, from that wellspring. Then our words don't just have the power to inspire others. They don't just have the power to break others. Their power goes much deeper than that. 36 and 37. I tell you one day, that on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Sticks and stones may break our bones. Words cannot just hurt us. Words can condemn us. Our hearts are laid bare by our words. We can see what kingdom we live for. We can see where our allegiances lie. This is Jesus' warning to us this morning. If you go through life with careless words, with idle chatter, careless with your ideas, careless with your intentionality, careless with the kingdom that you are married to, careless with your heart, we'll be able to look back on your own life, your own words, your own conversations will condemn you. All God will have to do is read a transcript straight from your own tongue, and He will find plenty of reason to condemn you. You won't have to work for it. It'll just be right there. And there's only one way to fix that problem. Only one way to shift that. That's exactly where we come to. It's how you find justification with your own mouth. If our own words can condemn us, our own words can also justify us. And here's what that means. Here's how that looks, how that works. Romans 10, 9 and 10. Confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised Him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes and is justified, and with the mouth one confesses and is saved. Now understand me, this is not saying that your confession, saying the words, makes it all better. What it's saying is that those words spring from something inside of you, not a heart of stone like the Pharisees have, but a heart of faith. It says, I am nothing, but I need this truth. That Jesus died for me, that He rose again, that He conquered over sin, He took my sins, and in victory He stands over them. And I believe that is true, and I need that. You can confess that with your mouth. You can know the true power of faith that saves you. Not words that are idle, but a heart that is changed. So that whenever you say this, if you confess to the resurrection, you confess to the atoning death and resurrection, His death in your place, you will trust God as an act of faith. A show of faith that is deep in your heart, God will hear it. That's how you fix your language problem. Language problem with your friends, language problem with others, begins by a new heart, a new wellspring from which your mouth overflows. The picture is a well that was poisoned, has now been made pure. When you draw water to speak, it's a different well. A different word that comes forth. Well is pure because its source is pure. Heart of faith. Not one that you produced by what you said, but one that God gave you. I want to be clear as I can here. This is not talking about walking an aisle and praying a prayer and all is good. It's talking about a heart that's that's spent, that's broken, that's at its end and desperately knows there's nothing else I have here outside of the death and resurrection of Jesus. Too often we can move away from that. We battle our own flesh, and our own flesh builds our own kingdoms. Jesus is saying, live for my kingdom, draw from that heart of faith. And then your words will match your heart. That's the picture Jesus gives us. What do your words say about you? What will your words say about you as you go forward? Here's a man that loves his family. Here's a man that loves his friends. Here's a man that loves his God. But say, here's a man, here's a woman that loves their kingdom, loves what they've built, and is obsessed with that. What do your words say about you? This is Jesus' warning to us this morning. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you that when we read things like this and we know that our words don't line up with what you would have for us, you don't leave us in despair. You don't leave us scrambling, trying to say the right thing, but instead you change the heart for us. Where the words come from, you take the poison out of the well because you took the poison yourself. Father, help us to live that way, so that everyone around us that hears us knows we have a heart of faith. Take away our I wants. Place it with the I loves, I cares. Place it with words like, I need you. I've got to have you. I'm desperate for you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.